welcome everybody to episode 262 of the Metabolist 2 podcast, featuring myself, Ben.
And I am David. And Ben, you are fresh off Gallifrey.
I am. Apologies to our listener if my voice is a little hoarse. I have been conversing high volume in crowded bars with fellow hooers from across the world over the past, goodness, since last Thursday. I guess it's Thursdays when I got in.
Yeah, 35th iteration of Gallifrey
1. In 35mm. And let it be known, and I thank Sean Lyons for this, that he spells millimeter in the correct way, with R-E rather than E-R at the end.
Ah.
There you go.
He knows his audience.
He knows his audience. Anglophiles all, basically. It was another excellent event. You have a Thursday evening, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Everything wraps up by 6 on Sunday evening, and then the convention is over. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty compact 3 days, but making new friends and meeting old friends and hearing about our favorite show is the order of the day.
Yeah, it was a nice kind of teaser that you, Lena, ingested for Gallifrey 1 this year.
Absolutely, yes,
yeah.
yes. And I was able to, I'm just trying to review what I actually did, because it's like, well, hang on. So I was able to meet up with another friend of the podcast, Taylor, on Thursday evening after I got in at the traditional ice cream social that begins the event, which is very nice indeed. Unfortunately, there was a gale, an absolute typhoon blowing in LA that night, and I had foolishly signed up for, this is going to be too long a story anyway, I'd foolishly signed up for something that meant I had to go and get a sandwich from Jersey Mike's within a certain timeline. I do secret shopping, try and make myself an extra bob or two. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I got absolutely soaked on Thursday evening, but I did get myself a large sandwich. So after the ice cream social, I didn't do any socializing because I was incredibly wet and just kind of wanted to stay in my room.
Were you drenched during the ice cream social, or did you?
No, I got Jersey Mike's after the ice cream social.
Okay, all right.
And I didn't have an umbrella, and I got very, very wet indeed. But there you go. Never mind. It's all part of the fun. I think in previous years we have had guests turn up at the ice cream social. Unfortunately, we didn't see any guests.
Yeah, Fraser Hines often
drops by. I didn't see him. I did see the delightful Susan Twist, though.
Yeah.
Who became a feature of the weekend. So that was good. She said that she didn't realize that she didn't have to, which I thought was absolutely great for her to
perfect.
Yes, exactly. And just what I expect from an English actor of her seniority and excellence.
Mm-hmm. It's on the program. I'm expected to appear.
There you go. Exactly. So we crashed straight into Friday morning.
Yeah.
And as is my wont with Gallifrey, I'm pretty much making a beeline for the... Oh, no, I beg your pardon, actually. I did dry myself a little bit, and I had a quick check in with the good friends of the podcast, Lena and Jess, on Thursday evening after I dried myself off. I'm sorry, I'm just trying to. There's a lot of alcohol consumed in the evening, so it's sometimes be hard to remember.
In the lobby con. Did your strategy of the flask work?
The flask worked excellently, actually.
Excellent.
It worked extremely well, and I was able to not only. Here's a thing, podcast fans. I bought a glass of wine for Jess because he likes a glass of white wine, and I bought a vodka cranberry for Lena at the bar. $37.
Holy Rassilon there.
What?
the screw of Rassilon on you.
Exactly. The gouge of Rassilon was being used. The price gouge of Rassilon. So yeah, I mean, and I'm sorry, I don't usually like to begrudge a bar opportunity to make some money, but no, that's just metaphorically and also literally taking the piss. So my flask strategy worked extremely well. The kind of flip side of that, I don't know if anyone's been interested. You can cut this out if it's too boring. but I mean, The flip side of like being wildly overcharged for alcoholic drinks is that they were giving away mixers for free.
Hmm.
So what I was asking for is like, I'll just have a ginger ale, please. Mm-hmm. And then they give you like a 16-ounce ginger ale.
Mm-hmm.
So to be honest, people who run the LAX Marriott, I think the bar staff are onto this. So what I did is that I tipped for getting free 8-ounce ginger ales.
Yeah.
Which I think is, that sounds fair to me. Anyway, the strategy worked very well. I was able to consume basically all of a bottle of vodka. It wasn't a whole bottle of vodka, it's half bottle of vodka over the weekend, and also was able to help friends and acquaintances also to get cheaper drinks.
Yeah, excellent.
So, yes, as is my wont, on Friday morning, it's really straight into the dealer's room. That's a kind of major feature for me. And I did have some deals I needed to get done. I bought a bunch of B&M Daleks with me and also some vintage World Distributor annuals, which I was keen to exchange for more valuable goods in the dealer's room. There were some good deals going on. I picked up a couple of very reasonably priced Daleks. And a copy of the 1973 World Distributors Doctor Who annual, which is a copy I don't have, for just $10. What?
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that's cover of Pertwee and Terry the Autons, right?
Yeah. He's looking pensive in a lab. It's a photograph of him looking pensive in a lab. Mm-hmm. And the reason it was so cheap is because the pages are completely detached from the cover. But just take it to a book restorer and they just glue it back on again. That'll cost you about $5.
Yeah.
I actually know people personally who restore books. So it's like, that's ridiculous. That's so cheap. Anyway, so that was very, 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 very pleasing to me. I was also able to, again, quickly reacquaintance myself with the wonderful crew from Roundel Books. So that's Gareth Kavanagh and Ian Winterton and Will Brooks.
Yep.
And Sean... And Sean Mason, who were there promoting the DNA of Doctor Who Kickstarter that they'd done, and the absolutely astounding Who, I can't remember what the book's called now, but it is a complete catalogue of all the character options, Doctor Who figures, which has been edited by Gary Russell and written by Richard Lloyd is the writer, who's one of the key collectors of the character options material. And they bought a stack of Martin Geraghty pages with them, so it was fun to look through those. I just wanted to introduce myself again to those jolly chaps.
Did you pick up a copy of DNA?
I didn't, because I contributed to the Kickstarter. And I contributed to the Kickstarter at an appropriate level, so then I'm getting a lot. Because they're all about Roundel Books is all about the VAM. So there's a bunch of VAM that is still under construction. Gary Russell, who's basically their editor, is still working through that with Richard, and that should be ready sometime later in the spring. So they did. So they had some kind of pre-production copies with them that were kind of marked, Gallifrey 1 2025,
right.
And that allowed people like me to kind of admire them and just think, wow, these are great. I did pick up a copy of the DNA of Doctor Who, the Philip Hinchcliffe book that again they did a Kickstarter for, I think earlier last year. I didn't support that on Kickstarter because I didn't really know what it would look like, but it's such a sumptuous volume and there are some really interesting essays in it, so I picked up a copy of that to add to my library.
Excellent.
Yes. So unfortunately I missed the first couple of sessions basically, which is fine.
You sent a picture from the autograph line of Paul Mars and Gary Russell then too. Did you get some signings?
Exactly.
Or?
Because when I finished spending money on things, I then start spending money on people. So straight into the autograph line. Again, if you get the autographs done first thing, then you don't have to worry about I mean, this is a safe space. You don't have to worry about not getting them later on. So I was able to get Louise Jameson, Nicola Bryant, Gary Russell, Paul Mars, and I think I'm forgetting who signed things for me. Yeah, I think the two big ones really were Nicola and Louise.
This was your first time meeting at least Jameson, right?
Yeah, I think Louisa hadn't been to Gallifrey for at least a decade or so, I think. And Nicola hasn't.
Well, she's always so busy.
She's a great actor, and she's always in things. Yeah. And I don't think Nicola had been for a while either. So it was good to see her, and she brought her husband Ned Fountain with her. So that was nice to.
He was signing books then.
Oh yes, yeah, he was signing his own books. I am on a budget. Sorry, Nev. I didn't pick up one of your books. I am on a budget in inverted commas. Oh yes, and the other SIG I got was SIG. That's what we all call it. it's called a SIG. The other signature I got was Fraser and Wendy. It's always nice to give some money to Fraser because he's always there and he seems like a nice chap. So I got him to sign my Target copy of Evil of the Daleks. And I got Wendy, who's delightful. Again, we're there with her daughter, Charlie, as we discovered last time. And I got her to sign. She was very gracious and signed my Blu-ray insert of The Blood on Satan's Claw, which, of course, she's one of the, along with Anthony Ainley, she's one of two who alumni who is in that classic of folk horror. So very nice to see them. As always, you know, it's very...
You always bring unique things for them to sign. Was there a little flicker of recognition in Blood and Satan's Claw?
Yes, or? To be honest, she actually did have a stack of Blood and Satan's Claw photographs, so I guess she's aware that there's some crossover. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the kind of joyous reaction that I had when I got Michael Jason to sign a copy of Quilla, because it was like, whoa, you've got a copy of Quilla? I was in that. Yes, I know you were, Michael. And then we were able to talk about Quilla, the not very successful BBC spy vehicle that he was in for, I think, a couple of seasons. Mm-hmm. So got all that crossed off my belt. And then I can relax, you see. I can, like, I'm not worried anymore. I've got all my SIGs.
Got the commerce done.
It's all done. And I have scoped out who I'm going to exchange my Daleks with and who I'm going to exchange my World Distributors Annuals with. And now I just have to think, you know, what I want to get in exchange. So then we're straight into an interview with Katie Manning, which was excellent. That was in program B. Katie was on absolute sparkling form as usual. She was talking to two people I didn't actually know, Heather Berberet and Stacey Watnick. So two ladies were interviewing her, and she's just a force of nature, and she's great.
Yes.
And such a good person, and, you know, everything, basically. I mean, she really is everything. And she, you know, she is in her late 70s now, but she's still absolutely full of energy. Now, I didn't see David Goodison being interviewed, because David was actually right after Katie, but he bounded into that room. I mean... Goodison, who again must be in his early 80s,
yeah,
absolutely just unstoppable. What? I wish I was that active, and I hope I can be that active and engaged when I'm 80, whatever he is. So.
Any Davros insights from Mr. Goodison?
No, really. I mean, obviously he's had an illustrious career doing a bunch of stuff, but really they just got him to talk about that the mask didn't fit.
Yep. Yep. Michael Wisher. I mean, that was the problem.
Exactly. So, I mean, no great revelations from David, unfortunately. In the same room, we're straight into TARDIS Talks, which is where our good friend Lena was presenting on the three 1963s of Doctor Who. Not actual 1963, Remembrance of the Daleks, 1963, and The Devil's Chord, 1963, which was very entertaining I think it's a topic that could be a full article rather than a relatively short talk. But it was great. There was another excellent... There was another really good one. A woman called Jay McCammant presented a talk called "Is Doctor Who a Religion? Sociological Perspectives on Faith and Fandom," which was very, very thought provoking. Actually, it was like, is Doctor Who a religion? Think about how we use it. Think about how it makes us feel. It may not actually be a religion, but both religion and our fandom are allied to the same mental states, which
interesting.
Yeah, and I think she's an actual sociologist. So I mean, she was able to pull up, you know, kind of, you know, actual sociology literature or whatever. So
not a religion, but a lot of the similar hallmarks of a religion.
Yes, exactly. It is allied in many ways, and you know, it is actually in some ways kind of a good way to think about the show. Well, comparing it to aspects of religion is actually quite a good way to kind of analyze how we use the show and how the show makes us feel, which I thought was, you know, thought-provoking.
It is a broad church in some ways, and we have our conservative factions with Canon and Not My Doctor. So it does have many different sects in Doctor Who fandom.
Absolutely. And then it was quickly whipping off to Program A, The Big Room, for a live commentary from Stephen Moffat and Julianne Robinson, so the writer and the director of Boom. From the latest series, which was, okay, the live commentaries, I think three actually is a better number than two.
Hmm.
From time to time, both Stephen and Julie appear to just be watching it,
right,
rather than commentating on it. Which is fine, and also the room is absolutely packed. And they had some kind of problem with the air conditioning in Program A, so
not a good thing.
Very stuffy in there, which nobody likes. Let's be honest.
Any insights on why, like, the gross out factor?
Yeah, I mean, they did talk about that. They thought that actually, in retrospect, the kind of flesh, puck that the soldier was turned,
the tube of flesh
was actually probably a bit much in the end, and they sort of wished that it had been less fleshy like that. But you know, she directed it, he wrote it, they're not going to say this sucks, they're going to say this is awesome.
Give it another 30 years, then they will give a more honest appraisal.
It didn't suck, it was fine, you know.
No, it's one of the better ones of Shudi's first season.
And you know, Moffat was, you know, he's very he was keen to, you know, he wanted to write, as I said, he wanted to write an episode where, you know, the Doctor is immobilized, and you know, there are relatively few people involved, and it's, you know, it's about the dialogue, and it's about the kind of tension, which again, I mean, that actually all worked very well, I thought. I think I then nipped off to get myself some dinner, in which case then when I came back, the room was still absolutely packed, and Catherine Tate was holding forth. So I watched her for a little bit, but I did realize that Catherine was doing other she was actually on at 5 on Saturday as well, so I kind of didn't bother with that.
Right.
And then really I watched a little bit of the Doctor Who Deathmatch, which Lena was on the panel. It's never been my favorite part of the convention. It's a Paul Cornell joint, and obviously Paul wasn't here this year. I'm not a big fan of his humor, and I'm not a big fan of the guy who took over from him. I can't remember his name right now, but he's that kind of tall, ginger British comedian who apparently lives in LA. So I apologies to everybody involved. I sort of just kind of tuned out of that a little bit. Oh, Ben Oquendo Paddon was the moderator. Well, I didn't realize that was actually his name. Anyway, but luckily, running concurrently with that was something I was interested in seeing, was the VAM, two things. One, the Meeting on the Common, and go figure, more than a Toy Story documentary. So Meeting on the Common is part of the VAM that Vought produced for their latest issue, which is a kind of dramatization of the Target novelization, David Whittaker's novelization of the Dalek story, which has this prequel where this is the first time that Ian and Barbara meet the Doctor and Susan on Barnes Common after a car crash. And that's absolutely excellent, very atmospheric, brilliantly animated. If our listener hasn't been able to get their hands on a copy of that, then they really should, because it's great.
Was it read by William Russell?
No. It's acted out with actors, not obviously the original actors, but actors doing the cast, and then animated. So it's a full animation.
It's the same animator that did the fan Celestial Toymaker episode, if I recall correctly. Pretty sure it is.
Okay, yes. I'm not going to disagree.
Not the commercial release, but
The fan release. Yes, early. Absolutely, it is.
Yes,
so it's
yes.
You know, labor of love, very well done. And then following quickly on for that was the Character Options Gazetta book is called Go Figure, and mm-hmm. part of the VAM for that is this documentary that was produced by Randall Books and it's an hour-long documentary about collecting, you know, Character Options. Doctor Who figures, and that's so. Who wouldn't want to see that?
Which you do,
which I do. So I was excited to see that, even though I will be owning my own copy eventually. So then it's straight into the bar, basically.
Yep.
Friday night. Didn't stay up too late. Stayed up to about midnight, I think. Chatting with Jess and with Lena and the various characters who you have popped into our little chatty bubble from time to time. Excellent. Was able to get Gareth Kavanagh a drink, and yeah, just the lobby con is a lot of fun. We had a nice long chat with Jonathan Morris, I had quite a lot to drink by the time he arrived, so I can't actually. I hope I didn't insult him. I was feeling very merry at that point. But it was great to see him. He's obviously a very, 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 very smart man. And
Doctor Who research and his writing, his novels, his Big Finish. I mean,
absolutely.
He's a man of many talents in the Doctor Who.
He's a dramatist and a researcher as well as being mm-hmm. a fan. And he was saying it was the first time he'd ever been to a Gallifrey convention. He didn't think he'd ever really like them. And I guess this was only end of day on Friday. He said he was really enjoying himself, so that's good.
Yeah.
He was saying it was a lot of work being a guest. He was quite nonplussed is the right word. Anyway, he found the whole kind of speed dating table event a bit draining, which I think this is where the kind of the conversation got interesting. You know, we were making the point that for actors, that kind of thing is quite energizing.
Right.
For people who aren't actors, that kind of thing can be quite tiring. So to bed. Gentlemen to bed, and then up bright and early Saturday morning, and I had to get up early and get some breakfast and get myself jarred up because 10 a.m. I was having a Stephen Moffat Cavi Clatch.
How'd that go?
That was really good. He is a very, very, you know, in some ways he's obviously on. And again, you're talking to Jonathan, really kind of brought this home to me. You know, these people are being paid a reasonably large amount of money, and they're working very hard for the weekend, over the weekend, and they are really kind of expected to be on. And mm-hmm. Stephen was definitely on, very intelligent, very engaging. Pretty much everything he said was a repeatable aphorism. Talked about obviously a little bit about how Doctor Who and Sherlock Holmes were the two things he loved the most when he was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But running Doctor Who and Sherlock Holmes at the same time when he was a showrunner almost killed him.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, it was like going home to your wife and she's saying, I can smell Sherlock Holmes. Doctor Who said, I can smell Sherlock Holmes on your breath. Like, no, I haven't been seeing Sherlock Holmes. I've been working with you, Doctor Who. So he was absolutely hilarious about that. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was great. I actually wrote down on my phone quite a lot of what he said. Basically, it was about writing. Everyone else in there, apart from me, were aspiring writers.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, you know, he said, basically, you know, you need to seduce your audience as a writer. Warriors are dead on the battlefield. Seducers sit on the throne, which I thought was a nice little aphorism. Don't be boring. He says all he ever really does, he just writes hooks. He writes pitches.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll sit in the pub with Mark Gatiss and they will just hook and pitch themselves until it's closing time. And he was pretty explicit when he said, you know, if you think what I write doesn't make sense, you know, have you even watched Doctor Who? None of it makes sense. So I don't really feel the need particularly to write stories that aren't just super engaging and super exciting. And if they have to be rounded up quickly by the end, then, you know, that doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Nature of the beast.
Exactly. And he also talked about something called fridge logic, which is if you're irritated by something that something in my episode doesn't make any sense. And so you angrily turn off the television or shut off your laptop and walk to the fridge and get yourself a, you know, a beer or something and a snack and then come back. If you're still thinking about my show, then I won, basically.
He gotcha, right.
Yes, and that's the point. If
you're going to do a podcast on my episode, even though you didn't like it, ha-ha.
Exactly. I always win. If you talk about me when I'm not in the room, I've won the argument. And I thought that was kind of a smart thing to say, basically. A couple of other aphorisms. This is even for writers, but this is good. You know, he said, like, I'm Stephen Moffat. They're going to read my script before they read yours.
Yep.
Speaking to aspiring writers. So, you know, basically you're going to get rejected. Get rejected. Just send in another script. Keep on writing. Mm-hmm. And don't get disheartened if they send you a bad note. If they send you a bad note, it means a critical note on your script. It means they've read it.
Right.
So you're a winner because most scripts go in the bin. And actually, it's funny. I was talking to Ian Winterton, who used to review scripts. And he said, you know, most scripts go in the bin. And unless the first word, and this is really something that Stephen emphasized, unless, you know, the first word is interesting, it is literally going in the bin. So you've got to work on this, basically.
It's about the hook.
It's really only about the hook. Mm-hmm. He said all of his projects have been basically about hooks.
I can see that.
So yeah, so that was a lot of fun, and I came away feeling, you know, oh yeah, yeah, he really is as smart as he appears, which he is.
Well, the other thing you wrote me, he made me want to rewatch everything he's done.
Oh yeah, no, he did. It was like, wow, this is really good. I should go and watch Sherlock and Dracula and Press Gang and Coupling and Tintin the movie, because he knows what he's doing, and I think he deserves all the accolades that he receives, actually, to be honest. And I know we've been critical of Stephen on this podcast, and I'm sorry,
very
Stephen,
much so,
if you're listening, which of course you are.
But you've won.
Exactly. Exactly. You're absolutely the winner here, and you deserve to be the winner, because I think essentially you're a good person.
Yeah, interesting that it was a room of aspiring writers rather than grumpy old fanboys.
Well, again, I mean, this is a theme that actually came across quite strongly talking to a lot of people over the weekend, is that people involved with the show in England coming over to the United States, the big difference they all talk about is that the fandom is so much more supportive and so much more enthusiastic and so much more kind of loving than cons in the UK, which I think they get a lot of day-tripping, grumpy men in their 50s who want to know why it isn't as good as it was in the mid-1970s. And they don't get that here, and I think that really kind of cheers them up and makes them feel happy and wanted and supported. So, you know, there you go.
Good on him.
Yeah, good on him.
It encourages him to come back, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. So then, really, that ran on a little bit, to be honest. I then basically went and had a chat with the Roundel Books guys and got into actually quite a deep conversation, actually, in the dealer's room with the Comic Con Museum, who are actually next door to Roundel Books. And they are a first and only host of the Worlds of Wonder Doctor Who exhibition that I saw in Edinburgh, not last year, but the year before. And that is opening in San Diego on March the 15th. And we run pretty much for a year in San Diego. If we have an American listener, if you find yourself in San Diego in the next year or so, really make a beeline for the Comic-Con Museum, because I think it's actually a really fun show, and they have a lot of great props and costumes and a whole bunch of stuff in that show.
When you're back in San Diego next February, you should take Amanda.
That's true. I think it might have been gone by next February.
Oh.
It opens on March the 15th. I think it goes by the end of the year. But, I mean, David, if you can find yourself in San Diego at some point this year, I would recommend it. It is a good show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Well, anyway, yes. So that was a lot of fun to have that kind of chat with those guys. I talked to a very nice woman called Emily, Dr. Emily, can't remember her second name now, but she was very, very pleasant. And she's the head of education for, and they, both her and a colleague, were spending the whole weekend, which is, you know, their weekend. They should be relaxing with their families, basically handing out leaflets at a Doctor Who convention. So good on them, basically. They deserved every... every break I gave them by having a chat with them. Anyway, so then it's straight into a double-headed interview, Louise Jameson and Nicola Bryant. So an hour of Louise, which is awesome because she's brilliant, and an hour of Nicola. Louise was being interviewed by Nigel Fairs, who I think is a thing, right? Is he a writer? He's a something. He was very good. And she basically was talking about her whole career. She's been on Emmerdale twice. She's been on EastEnders. She said she's interesting because she got effectively cancelled in the old-fashioned sense of the word. That they stopped her storyline on EastEnders very, very abruptly, and she still feels kind of bad about that. And she was actually comparing it to getting written out pretty abruptly in Doctor Who, and she said actually they were a lot more pleasant to me in Doctor Who than they were on EastEnders. So, you know.
Yeah, it was her choice to leave on Doctor Who. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think implications she probably would have liked to, in retrospect, would have liked to stayed a bit longer. But
we would have liked to have her stay longer.
Exactly. And I think there was a certain sense that she wasn't really fitting the Graham Williams vision for the show. That's the impression that I was getting from what she was saying. So that was kind of interesting.
She talked about Tenko at all?
No, we did not hear about Tenko, unfortunately. We did hear about the one where she's some kind of paranormal researcher. I can't remember what that was called now. Omega Factor? I think it's the Omega Factor. And then Nicola...
Toast of London? She talked about...
Oh, no! I forgot she was in Toast. Oh, no, I should have put my hand up and said, talk about Toast. What's it like working with...
Matt Berry.
With Matt Berry. Yeah. Matt Berry.
I'm the doctor.
The doctor. New York City. but she's brilliant. I mean, she's just like I was saying to Jess and Lena, and like, you know, she's just like when I was a kid, like all the friends of my mother were like this. They were kind of slightly husky voiced, very well put together, bohemian ladies, and absolutely she's a national treasure, an absolute joy, very, very smart woman, and still looks like $1 million, and
her eyes are still just dazzling.
Well, it's funny. I mean, they talked about the whole eye change thing. That was one question that came from the audience, and you know, as she kind of pointed out, well, you know, Leela was supposed to be Indian, which is why they darkened her skin, etc., etc. That's why she had dark contact lenses on,
right?
You know, she was supposed to be someone a non-white person. Which I hadn't really had that said to me kind of more as explicitly before. So that was actually kind of interesting. And then Nicola was being introduced by someone called James Kerwin, who I think is maybe something to do with Big Finish. Sorry, I'm not being very good at my podcasty duties.
That's all right. What did Nicola have to say?
A lot of great stuff. I mean, she's had she was talking about the whole, I had to do an American accent. And it was really challenging, even though, you know, I am kind of Anglo-American to start with. And then just then trying to not do American roles after she'd finished with being Perry. Right. Really, she said she really pushed for the kind of violent write out of the character. She really, really? Wanted to go out. She said, I wanted to go out with a bang. I didn't want to have a kind of, you know, wishy-washy get married to someone. She didn't use the word wishy-washy. I wanted to go out different. And then it was pointed out, well, you did then end up married to Brian Blessed. And it was like, okay, well, yes, fine, I did. But I also got a brain transplant as well. So, you know, all good, or body transplant, however that went. So that was great to see those two interviewed. She was very...
Did she talk about the cancellation?
She did talk about the cancellation. She really... how much I can say in a relatively public. She was very explicit about, you know, her opinion of why Doctor Who got cancelled, and it was personal beef between Michael Grade and Colin Baker.
How did Colin Baker rub Michael Grade the wrong way?
I think it was personal beef about relationships. I think it was ladies, basically, as far as I could understand. Ooh. Colin Baker was dating Michael Grade's ex-wife. And so, you know, it was like, I don't want this man in my show. I don't like this show.
Right.
And I also don't like this man. So the show is cancelled.
Yeah.
And then also, okay, the show can come back, but you know who's not coming back? That man.
It's personal.
So it didn't really paint Michael Grade in a very good light.
No.
And it was pointed out, well, you know, that was not covered in Matthew Sweet's interview with Michael Grade, because I think it's probably something that Michael Grade doesn't really want to admit. But certainly Nicola was very, very adamant that it was the whole thing was personal, which is a shame. It's a shame, but, you know. Nah.
Is she crossing over into slander?
No. She was very diplomatic about it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the implication was she wasn't explicit in so many, certainly not explicit as I've just been.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly the implication was, you know, it was a personal beef that was to do with people dating other people, you know, other people's ex-wives, and yeah. Anyway, so that was all interesting. But again, she's absolutely luminous and brilliant, and it was really, really great to see her interviewed.
Mm-hmm. Colin was there too. Did you happen to see Colin at all?
I'm coming to that.
Okay, sorry.
No, I did.
All right, I will. I'll let you continue on. Sorry.
Then Jenna Coleman. I was right at the back of the room in Program 8. It was boiling hot.
Yeah.
So I actually went and took a break because actually she was being interviewed on Sunday as well. So I was like, maybe not. And then after Jenna, I'm kind of saving my keeping my powder dry for what was just half an hour too little in Program 8 of Katie Manning and Paul Mars talking about Wild Time. And they were absolutely fabulous. I'd not really met Paul before. I'm not a huge fan of his work. He verges towards the whimsy, or leans into whimsy a little bit more than really suits my desire in terms of science fiction. But, you know, they obviously love each other. Well, I mean, there isn't anyone that Katie doesn't love. I mean, I got a huge hug from her when she was signed by when I got a signature from her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she, again, as usual, you know, Katie's lines for signatures is just goes on forever because she insists on hugging everybody. So it was great to see them having a chat. And basically they were literally just kind of chatting and just being friends. And that was very, very lovely to see. And she's just brilliant. And he's good as well. He's got big beard. So, you know, it's all good.
Panda was along too.
And also Panda was there too. Yep. It was all Wild Time all the time, basically. And luckily then I had a good seat in the house for Judy Garland and Joel Collins.
Yeah, producer extraordinaire.
The producers being interviewed after then. That was excellent. I was right at the front. I think they were probably being whisked off to do, you know, signings and stuff or whatever. So they didn't really speak for that long, which was a shame. Only about 45 minutes, half an hour or so. But it was very interesting, and you know, they seem very happy with the show. You know, Julie talked about living in LA and enjoying it, and you know, and her career, and Joel talked about, you know, his career and how he's happy with it. And you know, I think as far as they're concerned, you know, the show is going very well, and you know, all is exciting and interesting and being as it should be, which is good. They seem very kind of tanned and relaxed, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
Then immediately after those guys, we have Colin Baker and Sylvester McCoy being interviewed
by the two doctors.
Yeah, the two doctors. And apparently this was the first time they'd been on stage together at the convention.
Oh, I can't believe that. Really?
Well, I mean, the two of them.
Just
them.
They usually have Davison lurking around.
Exactly.
Doing the 80s doctors.
I mean, they're both old. I mean, that's obvious. And I think that's fine because we all get old. But it is interesting, certainly I found it interesting that, you know, as I said about David Goodison, when you see a lot of old people, and you know, people from Classic Who are old now, age at different rates.
Mm-hmm.
And you compare Katie and David with people who maybe are the same age but look and move older. I mean, Colin, I think, finds it quite hard to move now. He has a higher chair to sit down in, walks with a stick. I think Sylvester would like to be able to move like he used to, but really can't anymore, kind of thing. So that was good, but they were great, and you know, the same old stories came out, and it was, you know, it's nice to see them kind of doing stuff together. I think they were being interviewed by Riley Silverman. I think that was their interviewer, as I remember.
Okay.
Anyway, and then after that, we had an hour's worth of basically stand up with Catherine Tate, which was absolutely hilarious. I mean, I think her sketch comedy is hit and miss, to be honest, but she is a very funny lady, and I think, like a lot of you know, people who maybe who aspire to do sketch comedy, possibly. I think she's probably better as a stand-up.
Really?
And I think she's better at improv than she thinks she is. Mm-hmm. And it was just, she's just great. And she's, you know, very like her character. I mean, you can see why Russell cast her. Mm-hmm. She's very much like Donna Noble and vice versa. I'm completely uninterested in science fiction and answering science fiction stories. But, I mean, there was a... So she has problems with migraines, whatever you call them.
Yep.
So she was asking the lights to be turned down because obviously bright light shining in her eyes are going to give her a migraine, right. which is something we don't want. So then since she was basically roving the room with a mic, or at least she was accepting questions from the audience, which is something that the convention has stopped doing in recent years, but I think she's adamant that that's the kind of thing that she likes. So one of the questioners kind of, you know, congratulated her for advocating for herself. So then she immediately went on to immediate kind of improv riff about a new show called The Advocates, mm-hmm. Where people advocate for themselves. Like I don't like that smell. Can you please go away? You know, I can't do it because it was hilarious, and right. I'm not as hilarious, obviously, as she is. So yeah, this whole new show that she'd do called The Advocates, which would be a bunch of people going around basically being irritating by saying that they didn't want to do a thing that normal people think is fine. So yeah, she was great. That was excellent. And then it's 6 o'clock, and it's time to get to the bar.
Yep.
So another strong evening at the bar. This time, again, I spoke to a lot of people. Ended up doing the midnight photograph, which is a tradition that is a thing that happens, and we're able to introduce some new people to the tradition of the midnight photograph downstairs at the convention.
Is it in the lobby or down in the convention floor?
Oh no, everyone, you all go downstairs into the actual convention space and a photograph down there. And that is apparently the tradition. So it was up till about 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, 1:30 or so. So I was a bit tired and hungover on Sunday morning, which was fine, I think. What did I do actually? Hang on, wait a second. I'd had a highlighter this year, So there was Stephen Moffat interview on Sunday morning, which was I sat in on. And again, I think was kind of interesting. It was interesting hearing him being interviewed, not in the kind of intimate setting of the Cathy Clatch, but also in the by an interviewer. And again, you're talking about his time on the show. You're talking about Sherlock, talking about Doctor Who. There were questions about death, in inverted commas, of Clara, and said, like, you know, why didn't she stay dead? Well, he said, you know, the Doctor. I wrote this down. The Doctor keeps you safe. Like he said, I would never write an episode where the Doctor, someone died under the care of the Doctor. He said, you know, Adric was an exception that proves the rule, is that, you know, you companions do not die. The one thing the Doctor does is he keeps you safe, which I thought was actually a nice thing to say. And he's full of those kind of well-formed aphorisms about the show.
Kind of like Uncle Terrence.
Yeah, yes, actually, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, that is. I think that's something he shares with Terry. Actually, yeah, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, he's studied the show deeply and understands it in a deep way that makes him entirely the right kind of person who should be writing for it. Basically, So anyway, then goodness, what did I do then? I think that's when I did my. My deals with the. I picked up some good stuff in the dealer's room. Oh no! Wait a second. That wasn't no. So what I decided that I wanted to have Colin and Nicola's another signature from Colin and Nicola in one of my World Distributors annuals. So I queued up for that for both of them, which actually took an hour out of my day. And $80 out of my wallet, but you know,
it's worth it.
What are you going to do?
Yep.
So then it's straight back in. I sat in on a panel called "The State of Classic Who" on Blu-ray. I'm hoping for some insights about what's coming next on the Blu-ray range. Unfortunately, it was just people who, like me, are just fans of Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. So the insights were like, we don't know. we'd like to have this season. We'd like that one to be next. So right. that was. That was actually kind of pointless, I'm afraid. Sorry, guys.
What do you think is going to be the last season?
Well, I think that was the question. And I think, you know, the question that a lot of people were sort of chatting about at the weekend, what will be the last season? The one that's hardest to assemble, basically. There's a little bit of chat about
season three, then, probably.
Yeah, something like that. There's just whether, you know, what a Wilderness Years would look mm-hmm. like. You know, whether they can get rights to Dimensions in Time, get that on there, you know, whether there's other extras that could be piled onto a, you know, basically would be a McGann heavy release, obviously.
Curse of the Fatal Death.
You know. Yeah, so I kind of stepped out of that a little bit. I sat in on the charity auction for a little while, and then I kind of knocked around in the dealer's room for a bit until it was time for the Jenna Coleman interview, another interview with Jenna. And that was good. And it was especially good because they interviewed Jenna for about... And she hadn't been to Gallery One before, so it was kind of unusual to have her there. So she was interviewed for about 45 minutes. Who was interviewing her? Wait a second, let me find out. Oh, Stephen Shapansky again. He's very Canadian. I don't know exactly how Canadian he is. But for the last 15 minutes of that interview, Stephen Moffat came on.
Very nice.
So that was great. Nice little doubleheader. She's not my favourite companion. She's a very engaging... God, it makes me sound like very Patrick. She's a very engaging young woman. And good luck to her. You know, she's a good actor. And I personally think she was on it for too long. And I think Stephen sort of agreed that, you know, he didn't... There were kind of stops and starts to how her character should be. What her character was, and should she be a school... He said, well, like, governess obviously wasn't working, so then she became a school teacher, and from that it seemed that actually, you know, she was maybe someone who was more than one thing.
Right.
So I think organically then arose the idea of her being this kind of split person who's kind of, you know, throughout the Doctor's lives, she's always been there doing something. So there you go. So I just kept on sitting. So we had the year in review, which I always enjoy because it's all stuff that I haven't seen, stuff from British telly. And then we have the traditional closing ceremonies where Sean Lyons revealed that there are only going to be 3 more Gallifrey One conventions and then they are over.
Wow.
Yep. He doesn't.
Finito. Wow.
He doesn't want to do it anymore. He says I'm 55 years old, and he, to be honest, he always looks as though he's on the verge of tears, to be honest. I mean, I think it's really stressful for him. I don't know how he's survived it for so long. He was bitten by a fan this time round, apparently.
This year?
Yeah. What? So there was some crazed fan who was wanting to get in to see Jenna at a panel, and I guess the fan was being manhandled out, and he... bit Sean Lyons. I'm going to say the fan was a man fan. So, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean I'd actually heard that the night before from Gareth, so I all sort of knew that was going to be announced. So I don't think the biting incident was the reason, but still it was like, you know, I'm not doing this anymore.
So 2028 is the final Gallifrey.
2028 will be the final one. So, David, we're going to have to coax you out of your lair.
Oh, yes.
Everybody wants to see you there. I'm going to have to say this.
Yeah, I'll have to go one more time, I guess, if it's going to be the final one.
Well, I mean, I think those tickets are going to be... Those are going to be flying off the shelves. And actually, I think probably for these next 3 conventions, they're going to be flying off the shelves. I think people are going to really want those. And then another night at the bar, I spent a long time talking to Richard... is it Richard Lloyd? Can't remember. Anyway, the guy who's the writer of the Go Figure book... And then to a very nice man from New Zealand Dick Fiddy. I had a chat with Dick Fiddy from BFI, who's just a very cheerful, you know, well put together old man. So that was excellent.
Anything going on with BFI and Doctor Who? Or?
No more than I knew already.
Yeah.
But then another conversation with a man from New Zealand who runs a missing episode website. He kind of goes to the Library of Congress and copies out all of the TV listings for kind of Zambia from 1973. And he's trying to kind of, I can't remember what the website's called now. Anyway, so he was brilliant. I can't remember his name. Maybe I'll try and dig it up and send the link to you because I thought he was great. Things like he's mapped all of the physical transmission lines in Australia. So when you have Doctor Who was shown in Ballarat at 5:30, you know, on a Saturday evening, if there's no transmission line to Ballarat, then they must have been showing it. It must be a film copy. It can't be a transmitted copy. et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just very kind of very super detailed analysis of, you know, what is true in terms of missing episodes. And, you know, we again, the table was kind of talking about, you know, how Phil Morris had just gone off the deep end. And again, everyone agreeing there are missing episodes out there. Hmm. It's just that the people who currently have them aren't going to share them with anybody. And I think that's something everyone knows, that there are, there's at least, there was a little bit of discussion whether Web of Fear, the episode 3, whether that actually exists or whether that was actually destroyed by someone who was really irritated in Nigeria by Philip Morris. So that was kind of interesting. And then, actually, I'm getting near the time when I should be barbecuing for my family. So let's wrap this up.
Yep.
I was then spent a very, very pleasant Monday hanging out in Santa Monica with my new friends from Roundel Books and Susan Twist from off the show Doctor Who, Sutek. And she is absolutely charming, super fun. They all know her because she's been in shows in Manchester and she was in Coronation Street and blah, 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 and alternative theatre in Manchester. So, yeah, we just basically hung out all afternoon. We took the train, the light rail from the airport to Santa Monica, walked along the pier, had a burger. They all had beers. I didn't. And me and Will didn't have beers. And then kind of walked down to Venice Beach. And that was very, very enjoyable, and they're super people. I think by the looks of things, looking at Gareth's Instagram, they certainly had a day of it, and also an evening of it as well. They were all leaving on Tuesday. So that was great. Great to see those guys, and Gareth and I are maybe trying to cook up some stuff, possibly for the Comic-Con Museum, so that's fun.
Yeah.
And it was great to hang out with Susan, who's, you know, deserves all of the... It's funny, we were sitting having a burger, and three people walked by, one of whom was, you know, had a fez and a bow tie on, and the other had a, you know, like a long rainbow coat. It's like they're obviously from the convention. They were like, "Ah, it's Susan Twist from Doctor Who!"
Right.
And then she does the Sutek thing for them, and you know, she's obviously right in the sweet spot of I'm actually quite old, or, you know, I'm a middle-aged actor, and now I'm super famous across the entire world. And I think, you know, that's for an actor.
She's having fun with it.
Exactly. Having fun with it. Having fun with it is the thing. Yeah. So anyway.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like it was a fantastic convention.
It was it's always good. To be honest, I was like, every before I go, I'm like, oh, do I really want to go to this? It's expensive. The hotel's expensive. But I always have just the best time. And especially there's only three more now.
Mm-hmm.
There was some discussion whether they could get Rusty out to come out.
Mm.
RTD. Certainly Gareth was talking, why, because he just done this book with Philip Hinchcliffe.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, you know, we could maybe try and get Philip out there. Apparently the key to getting Philip Hinchcliffe to do things is golf.
Well, there is plenty of golf around LA.
Exactly. So we say, okay, we just need to find like a good golf course that he can have unlimited access to, and then you'll get Philip coming out, which would be, I mean, that would certainly tempt you, I think, down from...
Golf is always a winner.
You could challenge Philip Hinchcliffe to a round of golf. There you go.
There we go. Yep.
You have a couple of years to learn golf.
Then, I'll get practicing. Well, he'll probably be next year if they're coming out with the book.
Oh, well, I mean, the book's out already.
Oh, that's right. The
book's out. I mean, I think they've spent a lot of time with it. And again, I think we're saying about Philip, he doesn't really like conventions because he doesn't really think that Doctor Who is the main thing he did in his career, which is fair because it isn't.
It isn't, but it will be the thing that most people remember.
So, you know, maybe they could program the Astors or something, or Sergeant Schultz, which I didn't realize he was the producer for Sergeant Schultz, which I thought was great. That was a great show. So, you know, just program like a Philip Hinchcliffe season in the video room and get him some golf, and then Phil will be there.
Well, we will see.
We will see, yeah. Okay. Right. I'm afraid I have to sign off now because I have family responsibilities.
All right. Well, thank you for taking time out of your evening, and we'll...
You're very welcome.
...speak soon on Doctor Who.
Absolutely. I will. Okay. Thanks, David. Unusually, I'm actually just going to end this rather than we can have some conversation. Okay. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. I am still living with your ghost, lonely and dreaming of the West Coast. I don't wanna be your downtime. I don't wanna be your stupid game with my big black boots and an old suitcase. find myself anew.